Welcome to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast, where top football coaches from around the country share their stories, philosophies, concepts, and strategies to help you get better on and off the field. Now, here's your host, Keith Grabowski.
Welcome to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast. I'm joined by the good doctors here for another episode of Smart Coaching. And we are at midseason, and our topic today is managing the midseason slump. And when I asked Dr. Garrity for some ideas on what we could lead in with, he provided some very colorful ones, which we'll skip through and we'll just get into it today, guys. So great to have you back on the podcast.
Thanks for having us back, Keith. I was worried there that we weren't going to get invited back since we had a little slump on the first couple of episodes.
No, I still hit record today.
Thanks, Keith. Yeah, looking forward to chatting about how to overcome some slumps.
So the main idea of what we're going to talk about today is just looking at some areas where a team or individuals can slump. Sometimes it's the winning aspect of things. Sometimes it gets into the technical, the tactical, that there's not the performance that particular athlete or maybe a particular unit is looking for. And certainly there's psychological impacts to this and things that can affect an idea that we talked about, you know, way back in our first couple weeks of team cohesion.
Yeah. You know, it's funny how we start talking about some of this stuff and then old personal memories come back. In my senior year of high school, our football team, we went 0-10. The 3 years prior to that, we were, 7-3, 3-7, 8-2, and then 0-10 my senior year. And I was a three-year starter, yeah, both ways for 3 years. And our senior year, we weren't in a slump. We were just a bad football team. So I'll leave it to Clayton. He's got a good definition of what is a slump. But I think in whether you're losing consistently or if you were kind of performing at a high level and then drop down a little bit, figuring out how to maintain participation, a positive attitude, and keep on that train of improving your performance and sticking with something. And when you look up the academic literature on slumps and related topics, you'll find a lot on resilience, mental toughness, confidence, motivation, practice structures, and those types of things, because those are kind of related academic ways of figuring out how to kind of keep people on the train to keep with it and improve their performance.
I was actually reading a paper on slumps a couple weeks ago, and they were kind of critiquing the Webster Dictionary definition of a slump in this particular paper, where the Webster definition was a period of poor or losing play by a team or individual. But the problem is, as Brian mentioned, and Keith, we were kind of alluding to in the intro, was that if we just have poor performance and poor ability, that's not really a slump. We don't have the ability to meet a standard at a high level. So they kind of reconstructed the definition. If there's a present performance is noticeably lower than a prior level of performance, then it might be considered a slump. And that's kind of what they were rationalizing to help better understand this decrease in performance.
In your research and in reviewing the literature, are there triggers for a slump? I'm thinking in particular of something that my son's high school team is facing right now. They had their first couple of games. First game, it doesn't matter. You're going to be up for that. Doesn't matter who the opponent was. They did face an inferior opponent and put them away pretty quickly. The next week kind of followed suit. Then they hit their rival, big game, number 4 team in the state. They were number 8, and they beat them. And now they're into a part of the season where they're facing 3 weeks in a row, some teams that they know aren't going to provide that kind of challenge. And to me, that seems kind of a trigger potentially, if you don't handle it the right way, for that team to go into a little bit of slump, or maybe see their play downgrade if you don't approach it the right way as a coach. So I guess I got a couple different things going on right there. But back to my question, are there certain triggers for a slump?
Well, and what you just said, dude, and that relates back to the earlier point, was about really, in that case, arousal is one of the key kind of factors of performance. So what can happen, what you just described, is the first game of the season or versus a challenging opponent, that puts athletes, especially good athletes, in a mindset where they're hyped up or they're controlling, they're at their optimal arousal state. They're able to regulate and they're locked in. You know, they're highly motivated to play. They're going to give it their all throughout the game. You know, that's kind of what you just described. And then what happens is, you know, there can be a little bit of a lull. And so all of a sudden the mental game drops down, and then that's what causes a decrease in performance. You know, they're not as either hyped up or they're not as motivated to play hard because they think they're playing an inferior component. The other team's not as good. They'll just win no matter what, no big deal. And that's really then in that case perhaps what's causing the decrease in performance.
Yeah, I'd add just a couple of different categories that you of causes of slump that you would see in the literature. And the one example that Brian just described and what you just described, Keith, in respect to like playing really at a high level against the high performing teams, and then you know, there's some weaker teams coming up, and there may, that, like you said, there could be an opportunity for a slump. I would call that probably, like Brian said, psychological piece. But in the literature, you'd see like a couple of different categories of causes of slumps being, could be a physical thing that causes a slump, meaning it could be fatigue or physiological related, something technical, meaning there's a technical flaw perhaps in a skill, or it could also be technological, meaning that the equipment, shoulder pads, a change in equipment, new pair of cleats or something that could be causing the change or causing the slump. And then also final category is that psychological, which we just highlighted in respect to your example.
Guys, with that in mind, what would be some practical tips for coaches knowing that they face that? Because I think everybody is pretty well aware of their schedule. And, you know, I do want to get maybe into that team who has hit a slide here and isn't performing the way they want. But for those maybe who see it out ahead of them, what kinds of things would you recommend that they do to keep that arousal level high so that your team stays out of hitting that slump?
Good question. It's a tough one, too. Think of a couple things, a couple strategies. One I'll use would be perhaps visualization. And so I'm thinking of when I was back at Tennessee, too, we had a really top defensive lineman. I'll save his name and protect the story and his privacy. But when we played his home state, he wasn't from Tennessee. When we played his home state, his level of motivation was extremely high. You know, he was moving around, making plays, not making stupid errors, and just flying around. And so you watch that and you go, wow, you know, it's that typical kind of kid that right down south, SEC, he wants to show his hometown people, and he wants to kind of stick it to him a little bit. And there's that rivalry that starts, you know, that, you know, you go into another state and you pick the kid out of there. So, you know, this guy's got unbelievable NFL type potential, but he's inconsistent. And how do you get him to be more consistent? You know, so one strategy would be to actually have him visualize and do some self-talk to where then every time, every play until it becomes habitual, he's getting himself at that level of arousal to really dominate a game and take over, which he could. So start thinking about every team being wearing that jersey from your home state, talking to yourself, saying things. And you can think of a lot of great NFL players, you know, that you see them doing that during the game, that they're jarring at the other guy, or they're hyping themselves up, or they're talking a certain way about what plays they're going to make. Come bring the ball to me. Come send it my way. And there's a little bit of that trash talking, but that can be also a use of positive self-talk and a modulator, a mediator for adjusting somebody's arousal level to get yourself kind of pumped up to that high level, which you often see in football and in high contact physical sports. So visualizing and positive self-talk is one way to modulate or regulate that.
Yeah, I'll piggyback on different strategies. I would first say that we would probably want to look to kind of determine that cause using that similar framework that I talked about with the categories in which they discuss different causes of slump being physical, technical, technological, or psychological. And this isn't to say that they don't overlap, meaning that someone literally has a flaw in their technique or they just can't find it again. That's also going to have some psychological implications where their confidence is going to go down. But I think at least exploring or trying to reach a look for what the cause of that slump may be would kind of lead to different practical strategies. So, for example, in regards to the physical component, you know, it's easy to kind of say that fatigue might be an issue. So we may want to reduce the load, maybe change some things up in practice and have some lighter days maybe during the middle of the season, right, if it's a physical fatigue type issue. If it's technique, something technique orientated, that might be changing the practice structure of that particular drill. I'm curious to hear what you guys think about changing the technique so drastically can have some negative implications as well. So maybe it's just changing the practice structure of the drill or activity that increases the technical aspect of the skill without, like, telling the athlete to completely change their throwing motion or something like that. Maybe it's just changing the kind of the structure of the drill, if that's the issue. With the technological piece with equipment, if that might be the issue, maybe modifying some equipment, modifying the shoulder pads or something, with keeping safety in mind, if that perhaps is causing the issue. And then in regards to the psychological causes, like Brian mentioned, he mentioned visualization, so perhaps goal setting and setting very specific goals. And this is kind of where that overlap would occur, because I could see goal setting also going into the technical aspect as well in regards to, I'm going to get X amount of extra repetitions at this particular activity to help increase my technique, as an example. Another psychological type technique, Brian talked about self-talk, maybe changing the external focus as well, the focus of the athlete towards something more positive as well.
I would say, too, to add to the idea of the equipment side of things, that it's best in those cases to involve somebody who's an expert with that. So if you are fortunate enough to have an equipment manager and a guy who's certified to do those kinds of things, those guys can certainly help. I could think back to some instances where maybe our quarterback might have had some issues with his range of motion or was feeling restricted by his pads a little bit. And I think some of that maybe went into the psychological side. But, you know, our equipment manager then did something with his shoulder pads, and he also did something with the sleeves on his jersey to give it a different hem and give him that feel of more mobility that he needed to get over the hump. And I think if you don't have those kind of guys, I know that a lot of guys out there, Rydell is a good example, their equipment salespeople, representatives, really know how to solve some of those problems. And when I was at the high school level, we used to get those guys involved all the time to say, hey, you know, this guy, maybe it's something dealing with an injury and it's nagging and that's causing the slump, but there's some things they could do to change that up to protect them. So just keep an eye out maybe for some of those things.
I'll give you one. I'm trying to figure out some things, too, for this that are a little bit harder to see. And I think you touched on one possibility. And I'm thinking of like an injured athlete or an athlete maybe that's got a blister or the trainer taped them up or put a wrap on them a certain way and the athlete's not comfortable with it. And I was thinking of knee braces. When the knee braces came out now years ago, a lot of the guys and the linemen were like, oh, I can't move, I can't bend, I'm not as fast. And people started doing research to look at that and actually showed that the change of direction and the speed of the athlete wearing a knee brace is minimal, a couple tenths of or hundredths of a second. Mm-hmm. So the notion that somebody uses that feel as a handicapper or they're maybe hiding and masking some pain perhaps, that's one of those things too where you're kind of wondering, right? It's a little bit insidious because it's not really visible. Can't necessarily measure it. So just trying to think outside the box sometimes and realize what's maybe more obvious compared to what we aren't thinking about or what's being hidden, why guys might hide that as well.
Absolutely. And I think it's involving all your team. And sometimes we don't think of people outside the coaching staff that maybe can help us identify some of those things. And I think it's always good to have those open lines of communication, whether it's your equipment people or your athletic trainers or doctors, whatever it might be. Make sure you keep them involved because they may be able to provide some insight that helps you with some of these problems. Guys, looking at another area of this brings to mind, unfortunately, my hometown team here, who's sitting at 0-1-1, and you know, opportunity to win two games and be 2-0, and everybody here talks about, well, you know, Hugh Jackson still has these guys with him. Essentially what they're saying is they're still a cohesive team. And I've seen these situations before where as you continue maybe on a path that is not meeting your goals, where you're losing, that idea of the coach is starting to lose the team. You almost hear it. It becomes cliche when people say that. But I think what we're talking about there is the team cohesion, and as maybe some of those guys lose their focus because certain goals might have disappeared for the team or certain individual goals maybe disappeared, that things start to maybe get fragmented in a way that you have to address some of those things to keep those guys together. In terms of that, the team cohesion side of things, what are your guys' thoughts as far as how you, I guess, get out of that slump and keep those guys together?
Don't you just trade the wide receiver?
Yeah, we got a new kicker too, so.
No, it's great points. And you know, throughout this whole process, and one of the things that I go back to too is planning. And I think if coaches develop a plan for these mental, emotional aspects and are really integrating in team cohesion and bonding, confidence building, resiliency building, coping skills, self-talk as a team, collective efficacy is what we call it academically, team confidence, and reworking their process and really locked into that, then you're going to start to reduce some of these ideas that the coach is all over the place or coach is very inconsistent and is just trying anything, scrambling for an answer. And then you're going to appear like you're not credible and that you aren't knowledgeable about what you're doing. You know, if the coach is planned and is obviously working towards winning and problem solving and has built up a solid foundation of relationships and firm credibility to come back to, then I think the coach is going to be problem solving and not lose anybody. It's a matter of, you know, we're going to work the process until we get this thing figured out, and we're going to recommit to our team values and our goals and try methods to overcome it rather than, you know, everybody's just going to bail ship and got a big time problem here.
Yeah, I would agree with that, because I know exactly that phrase, and I know exactly that feeling too, where it's like, well, we're kind of, the wheels are falling off or whatever. But I feel like in regards to the team cohesion and what Brian was saying is, if we're doing those things regularly and consistently on a weekly basis, then it's not like, oh, okay, we need to have this big change when this slump happens or we feel like maybe we're starting to lose some guys or whatever. So where it's not like, oh, wait, let's go back and revisit our goals after 3 weeks of poor performance, like that's the magic sauce. I think if you're revisiting the goals weekly or biweekly on a consistent basis, and you have these embedded things that are already in your drills and activities in regards to team cohesion and resiliency, that you're more resilient to the slump in regards to being a cohesive unit and in regards to the technique and the wins and the outcomes that we're looking for. Picking apart a little bit of the research, and they showed that elite athletes are typically more resilient to slumps, and they get along better. And that also goes for the team cohesion component in team environments. And why is that the case? Because their skill set has been reinforced and they practice it all the time, that when they have a little dip in performance, it's part of meeting the average, meaning, you know, the next game they may be a little bit higher than the norm or their mean outcomes in that regard. So I thought that was kind of interesting, but I'm with Brian in regards to planning and embedding those things that are important in regards to team cohesion and those mental skills regularly and consistently so that they're practiced, so that when that slump does happen, you can be resilient to keep on trucking along and it doesn't stagnate for a while.
Yeah. I mean, you think of some great coaches, or coaches really too, that win consistently and often, and I don't think the team falls off the bandwagon suddenly because they've developed relationships, they've got competence, they're improving performance. It's just a matter of, we're going to find our way out of this and we'll be fine. You know, actually your hometown Cleveland Indians too are another good team that has had slumps before, but then last several years have been very good at winning games and, you know, getting back. And so probably some dynamic there too, that there's a belief in the unit, there's a belief in each other. Then you go out there and you punch the clock and you go to work every day trying to get better. It's the coaches that are scatterbrained or are all over the place. And, well, you know, our offense, our 3-4 this week didn't work, so we might as well go ahead and switch it to a 5-2. And, you know, and then the next week, well, let's run to a 3-4 now. That doesn't appear to be planned or well thought out, and now you're in panic mode, perhaps because you're still faking it rather than developing a long-term development plan to enhance performance.
And I think you need to think of it in terms of micro changes. You're not going to make some big monumental changes during the season because I think that maybe even lends to that factor for the players where they're saying, oh, crap, what's going on here? When you make some of those big changes and gets them start to look at themselves and could have a psychological effect as well. I wanted to run, thinking back to my days as a head coach, wanted to run this idea by you. I think there were some maybe well-executed things in here and maybe things that I wouldn't recommend, but this particular team came off a really good year, set a lot of records in the school offensively, won a lot of games, and had a lot of guys back. And over the course of the first half of the season, the first five games, we ran into injuries, had a guy suspended, lost some close games, and we're sitting at 2-3 in a season where we were thinking, okay, we're going to compete for a conference championship, we're going to the playoffs, all those kinds of things. And those goals literally disappeared in front of our eyes in those first five games. And we were at a point where we felt that we were facing an opponent that we should beat, but our guys were in that slump and they were wavering. And it was one of those things like, okay, you know, we could lose them here. They could cash it in because they worked so hard for those goals, which leads me to maybe we could have done a better job being process focused at the beginning. But I think at that point, our idea in thinking of some of those things now that I know that, you know, we were probably trying to provide that arousal for them to get back on track and to have a positive end to that season. So what we did is, you know, we went through the locker room, we took down the schedule, we took down some of the different goal boards, and we put up there, replaced it with a five-game schedule. And essentially we told them, hey, we're restarting the season. We're approaching this and we're going to finish strong. We're going to each week focus on the opponent here. We're not worried about those things that happened before. Our goal is these next five games. Find a way to get these next five games. So I think the danger in that, and we took a calculated risk, was if that didn't go right, we were in big trouble. And as coaches, we made a decision that probably kept us in that slump and potentially, you know, we would have to pull that one out of the fire. But looking at things, I do think we were successful in creating kind of that arousal, that stimulus to get them focused on something new and to forget some of the things in the past that hadn't gone their way.
Yep. Yeah, so the refocusing and going back to, again, the process, not worrying about the uncontrollables, going back to the things like their effort, you know, the attitude of practice, how fast they move, their focus of attention. I think those are all very sensible things to do. And to do it early on, sometimes too, coaches get distracted with, we've got to win, we've got to do this, we've got to do that to achieve this level, versus breaking it down even further to, let's just win the play. Let's just win this one repetition. The goal for today is to have quality reps, and you can try to measure that somehow as well. So again, breaking it down into smaller controllable pieces rather than, hey, we can't help that people get hurt, and we can't help or control our opponent. But what we can control is those things like you're talking about. So I think it is a good calculated risk. It sounds like you made the best of the situation versus standing around waiting for things to change when maybe they were going to stay down at that lower level. So I just think going back to the original plan of, you know, how can we embed these types of focus-oriented or process-oriented things, you know, earlier for everybody and make those strong, really strong habits and behaviors and coping skills and resiliency skills and reframing struggles and challenges as opportunities and ways to grow. And hopefully tapping into then eventually their intrinsic motivation and why they're going to be there to be great competitors, you know, not just to check the box and win the championship or got to be some type of external, extrinsic motivator.
When I was listening to your story, Keith, you know, I was thinking, I was like, yeah, I think that's a good strategy at the time. But I was also thinking, like, what would have happened if you would have started with that approach right out the get-go? Mm-hmm. Now, granted, I know you mentioned you had some injuries or whatever. So I was also thinking, like, how do you prep your secondary players or whatever, your role players on the front end? How does that impact that 2-3 thing as well? But that comes back to planning. But given the circumstances, I think, like you said, you're kind of reframing and getting back to the process. It also made me think of another approach to coaches that I talked with football coach about, an old football coach about, and his kind of that process going back to the goals and the process-orientated goals and values, and he used to set up a camera during practice, which most coaches do during certain Team D or Team O, and he used to set it on the same frame every time, and one of their values as a unit was to have the most amount of players around the football. So the goal was obviously 11, but he used to videotape, and he used to keep it on the same frame and the same position. And when they used to go back and review the tape, the goal was before the whistle blew that we had the most amount of people around the football. And that was kind of their core value. And it just made me think it was like getting into this process-orientated approach, but they embedded it pretty much throughout the season. But something like that could be, if you are getting that mid-season slump and maybe you weren't putting these things in place consistently throughout the season, that going back and refocusing on those things might be a useful tool if that's the case.
That's a great measure there, Clayton. That's one that, you know, a lot of defensive coordinators use too. Is that's a great outcome of to see the energy and the motivation and how people are moving on the field.
Yeah, totally. Just process-oriented approach.
Yeah.
Guys, I think we shared some great ideas and insight onto slumps, what causes them, potential triggers, and some ideas on how we might get out of them. What are the final thoughts you have on this topic this week?
My final thought, too, I was thinking, because we did a workshop a few months ago here at the university about winning streaks. And in a way, slumps are kind of the opposite of that. And winning streaks, when you look at the literature on that one, too, they really don't exist either. Or future performance, or past performances don't predict future performances in the sense of, in some of the research, they'll look at, can an athlete get hot? You know, do they get streaky? And inevitably, they really don't. And so, like, if you just make one shot, are you liable to make another shot? If you have one good performance after another, was it because you were streaky, or was it because something else was controlling the physical, mental, technical things? I go back to this. I'm thinking today, I'm talking about slumps, winning streaks now. It's really all about enjoying the process, enjoying the journey, discovery, problem solving, not getting bogged down in minute details on if a slump's going to occur, if winning streaks are going to occur. You know, the reality is that people learn and they grow at different rates as well. And so let me think about the things that are going to get me better and not waste my time and energy on figuring out if I'm in a slump or I'm not in a slump, or just paradigm shifting, like I've got to completely hit the panic button and start over. So let me go back to looking at, how do I develop coping skills? How do I develop compassion towards myself? How do I change the environment to be supportive and help people, give them the resources to overcome? How do I learn good technique and refine that technique? And not, oh, I heard something and I've got to change completely how I'm doing type of thing. I guess my final point is not getting bogged down in even the notion of a slump or winning, and just going back to being an athlete, competing, trying to get better and problem solve things as they come up, and stay the course and work the process.
Yeah, I would just add that I think it's important to consider that athletes have performance variations. Their performances vary, and they vary as a team as well. So I think sometimes we may assume a slump is existing when it may not exist, or we may make a slump. I'm going to say we're going to make it occur. We make it exist in our head perhaps sometimes because we may see a little bit of a variation in performance. But again, I think with planning and threading some of those soft skills throughout the season, and focusing on the process, like Brian was suggesting, with all those little subtle things that you're kind of doing consistently, that I think you'll stay away from the slump, generally speaking, anyway.
And if all else fails, get a new kicker, right?
Yeah, right. You ain't kidding on that one.
Well, we'll see how that goes this week. Well, guys, the next couple weeks, we're going to be talking about effective coaching. First, we're going to deal with athletes' perception of effective coaching. We'll follow that up the next week with coach development towards effective coaching. And, man, we are just marching through the season. I appreciate your guys' time and joining me on the podcast and all the things you've been sharing here with us.
Well, I appreciate that, Keith. We're just going to keep working the process, and hopefully people tune in, and we've got some good content, and we practice what we preach. And I'm actually excited for the next month ahead, too, because a lot of those topics are research that I've done through my dissertation and have studied. And in the U.S., those are really popular topics, effective coaching, quality coaching, and looking at those behaviors from athletes' perceptions as well as the coaches.
Yeah, thanks again, Keith. Yeah, I think looking forward to some of the upcoming things related to the process so we can stay out of our podcast slump.
There it is.
Thanks for listening to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast. For more resources, visit the Coach Performance Center at usafootball.com.